A spacecraft launched by NASA in 1999 flew by a comet, Vild 2, earlier this year, and the snapshots the spacecraft Stardust took of the comet show things that are making astronomers say, "Wow, who would have thunk it?" The mission's principal investigator is here to talk about these surprising photos and whether they mean we've got to rewrite the textbooks about comets. The new photos of Saturn's moon, Phoebe, appear similar to looking like the comet. So could they have originated in the same place in our solar system? That's what we're going to be talking about first up this hour. And if you'd like to talk about this mission to a comet, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we actually have a photo of the Vild 2 comet. It's spelled W-I-L-D, but it's pronounced Vild. Vild 2 comet right there on our science on, website on Science Friday. Let me introduce my guest. Donald Brownlee is the principal investigator for NASA's Stardust mission, a professor of astronomy at the University of Washington in Seattle. He joins us today from KUOW in Seattle. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Brownlee.
Thank you.
Was I going overboard when I said astronomers are saying wow at these photos of Vild 2?
Everyone is saying wow. We said wow when we first saw them on January 2nd. We were really, you know, when you're exploring something in space, you always hope to find something exciting. But it's a real thrill when you find something that's quite unexpected, and that's what we saw.
And what is so unexpected about this comet?
Well, this is a comet that, you know, formed out near Pluto, out beyond the orbit of Neptune. It spent billions of years out there. It spent a few million years in transit into the inner solar system where we are. Mm-hmm. And now it's stuck in this orbit. It's called a Jupiter family comet, where it's whizzing around the sun every 6 years or so. And it's doomed. It within, you know, tens of thousands or thousands of years, it'll either disintegrate totally, because it loses mass at rates of tons per second right now, or it'll hit a planet such as Jupiter or the Earth, or the sun, or it'll get tossed out of the galaxy. So we've seen this in a very interesting stage. And this comet that formed out by Pluto was trapped into its present orbit only in 1974, just 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we didn't know what to expect. We thought, well, maybe all the surface would be really old and it's be covered with craters and look kind of like Phoebe, this satellite of Saturn that you just mentioned. Or on the other side, it could have been, well, this comet could have been in here long enough that it would have ablated all of its surface away and lost all records of its ancient past. Now, comets are different than any other body in the solar system in that they are coming apart when you see them in the inner solar system. They're losing their surface material. So we could have seen...
They used to call them dirty snowballs, basically.
Well, yeah, they're made out of dirty materials and snow.
Right.
So that they are dirty snowballs in that sense. That term was coined by Fred Whipple at Harvard University, and so those are the components. But we could have seen a featureless surface that was completely refreshed. We could have seen an ancient crater surface. We saw something kind of in between. We saw a surface that does contain features that are billions of years old. Another feature that were made just yesterday, and amazingly enough, it's unlike anything we've ever seen, including Phoebe. Phoebe probably formed in the same place. It probably formed out where Pluto is, and then it was early in the history of the solar system. It was captured in an orbit around Saturn.
Well, let's talk about some of the surface features of Vild 2.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you've talked about it so much, you think we all know what they are.
we saw some astounding things.
The
biggest things we saw, when we first saw the images, we just couldn't believe it. There were these two huge depressions. We called them craters, and they are crater-like depressions on the front, and they look like footprints. We now call them left foot and right foot. And it looked like a big clown foot just stepped into this comet and put kilometer-long depressions in them. They're, you know, hundreds of meters deep. And we still don't know what those are. Those may be impact craters. They may be impact craters that were processed by loss of volatiles into space, or they could have a totally different origin. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, they look like sinkholes, you know, the closest approximation on Earth, but no one has ever seen anything like that on a body other than Earth. So it's a big question how they form.
And you had
they're not sitting on the moon. They're not sitting on Phoebe.
Yeah. And what other interesting features were there? Was big columns on the comet?
We saw columns, or we call them pinnacles, and it was very intriguing to me. I had just a couple of weeks before the flyby in January, I'd been down to Monument Valley in Arizona, and so here I'm looking at the picture of the comet. And I'm seeing Monument Valley. I'm seeing pinnacles. We have a spectacular case. You can look on the Stardust webpage. There's a pinnacle that's a big column over 100 meters high, and it's sticking up into the sunshine, even though its base is in the shadow, and it's casting its shadow on this cliff off the distance.
Wow.
It's almost exactly like Monument Valley. There are also mesas. There are some mesas that have flat tops and vertical cliffs on the sides. These are things you really don't see on other solar system bodies. And of course, we also saw jets. We were expecting was one jet or two jets. Jets are gas and dust and rocks going off into space. And we saw dozens of jets, which is a real surprise.
So it's like that's one of these round twirling lawn sprinkler sort of things that spinning around, gassing out stuff.
Yeah, the active regions are localized, and when they get illuminated by sunlight, they shoot off these supersonic jets of gas that drag dust and rocks out into space. And the spacecraft also detected this, and the spacecraft was flying by, and instead of seeing just a smooth pelting of particles, there would be incredible bursts of up to 1,000 particles per second on the detector. The detector's small, so the whole spacecraft is getting hit by like up to 1,000,000 particles per second. And then there'd be nothing. And then there'd be some more. And then nothing. And so what happens was the spacecraft was flying through these jets and sheets of material being shot off the comet.
And so it had all this protective shields up on the...
Right? Yeah, we had shields that are almost a foot thick to protect the spacecraft. And amazingly enough, we had about 20 particles that were big enough to actually go through the front layer, which is about a centimeter thick.
And
the shield did its job.
And so the spacecraft is going to come back to Earth with its collection, right? January 2006?
Yeah, the primary function of the mission is to collect comet samples and bring them back to Earth. We're coming back in early 2006.
Mm-hmm. And you'll be able to collect the particles. And you already know, and I think another thing I was reading about the surprise was how much of a carbonaceous material was on this comet. Is that right?
Yeah, comets are composed of basically three kind of components. They're made of rocky materials and organic materials. And ices and volatiles. So the surface actually lost the ices, so it's kind of freeze-dried material. But the organic materials and the rocky materials are still there. And so that's what we're bringing back. We're bringing back thousands and thousands of particles that from the comet. And these are particles the actual solar system was made out of. And they're preserved out Pluto's distance from the sun for 4.5 billion years.
Do you have to rethink? I mentioned rewriting the textbooks. Maybe that's a little extreme. About what comets look like and what they may be made of. Now that you've been to this, do you have to create? You can't treat them all alike. You have to create different classes, perhaps, of comets.
Well, it's certainly a great refinement. You know, not being able to see something. You can imagine all kinds of processes, and just a single picture of something is so illuminating, and also, you know, confines what kind of models that people can make in the future. But we have seen close up now sort of the last class of thing in the solar system. There have been two other images of comets taken of Comet Halley and of Comet Borelli, but this was the closest up, and it was just a stunning body.
Let me see if I can get a quick call in. Warren from Baton Rouge. Hi, Warren.
How you doing?
Hi there.
I just wanted to ask, one of the things I've long wondered about is why in some of these long probe missions that we haven't put something on one of those large asteroids or a comet for the purpose of long-term research.
Can you land on? Yeah. Yeah. Land on a comet.
Yes.
Yeah. Doctor?
Yeah, I've always wondered why.
Well, you can. That's just a later step in the evolution of what you do. First of all, if you look at the pictures on the website of this comet, you realize it's a real challenge because this is an unbelievably rough surface with cliffs that are hundreds of meters high and pinnacles. You wouldn't want to land on top of a pinnacle and deep craters. But nonetheless, there is a mission called Rosetta, which is in space right now. It's built by the European Space Agency. and it will arrive at a comet in 2014, and we'll have a small package that will land on the surface. It's part of the exploration scheme, but it's more complicated than we did. We're a low-cost mission, and we're just doing as much as we can, taking the pictures and collecting samples and bringing them back.
Mm-hmm. And does the spacecraft crash into the Earth when it comes back with its payload, or how do you save it from being, you know, burned up?
It comes back to Earth, and we have a capsule that's sort of you can hold in your hands size, and it reenters the atmosphere like Apollo did. And at 12,000 feet, a parachute pops out, and it drops down to the desert near Salt Lake City, and we pick it up.
And because there's so much organic material in this comet, there's always speculation that, you know, we wonder where the chemical evolution, the seeds of chemical evolution of life on Earth came from. Could it have been from comets like this, many of them crashing into Earth, bringing organic material?
Absolutely. The Earth intrinsically had little or no organic material and even water on it when it formed. And much of its water and organic materials came from the outer solar system, where these things are much more abundant. Comets and asteroids contain relatively large amounts of organic materials and water relative to Earth. Mm-hmm. So these kinds of bodies did certainly play a role, and when life, you know, formed on Earth, it had to be made out of organic compounds, and there are two possible origins: either they were synthesized on Earth by prebiotic processes, or they came in from space. So we know these things exist on asteroids and comets, so they're definitely a source. And so that's one of the exciting aspects, is to understand the nature of the organic material on comets.
Mm-hmm. And this was quite an engineering feat. This was a real robot that had to know, take care of itself when it got close to the comet, find the comet and take the pictures, come back.
Yes, we were going through a very severe environment. The comet is surrounded by rocks, and we were hit by up to, you know, grape-sized rocks at 13,000 miles an hour. So it was a real feat to do that. It's also a feat just to get there and fly by. We didn't exactly know where the comet is until we get there. So our imaging camera, we actually called the navigation camera, the NavCam, and that was to find the comet when we got there. And because the spacecraft was on the opposite side of the sun, the light travel time from the Earth to spacecraft and back was almost an hour. So the spacecraft had to do this all on its own. It had to find exactly where the comet was the last minute, roll the spacecraft to beautifully line up for the image, and then fly by, and then track the comet as it went by. It was taking pictures. It's kind of like taking your camera from a rapidly moving car and taking pictures of something on the side of the road. And it was moving over a degree a second at the closest approach.
Mm-hmm. And so you're pretty excited about the results of this. And
It was just absolutely thrilling to see that, you know, not only the spacecraft worked well as that we had worked so hard on, but also that nature cooperated in a truly wonderful way and providing this just incredible wealth of information. I mean, we've seen a sort of a new class of body in a way that we've never been able to see it before, and it's very, very exciting. Most, you know, small things in the solar system are just heavily cratered and look like the surface of the moon. And here we see flat-floored craters with vertical walls. We see craters with halos around them. We see pinnacles. We see vertical cliffs, jets, white spots. It's a wealth of things that just haven't been seen before. Well, so it's a real challenge to understand these.
Donald Brownlee, thank you very much for joining us this hour, and good luck
to you. Much.
He is a principal investigator for NASA's Stardust Mission, professor of astronomy, University of Washington in Seattle. We're going to take a quick break and come back and change gears and talk about childhood depression, how to watch out for it, what you can do about it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.